little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan, 'cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying. Think for yourself.
Well, a very hearty welcome to a show called Thinking Clearly. This is a show about critical thinking and related topics. And my name is Bob Frelick, along with co-host.
I'm Julia Minton.
It's not a rut, it's a routine, but we usually talk about how folks can get in touch with us and how they can pop up our previously archived podcast versions of Thinking Clearly.
If you've listened to Thinking Clearly before, you've definitely heard me say that we are podcasted, and we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast. Whatever podcast app you use, you just bring up ad feed or search for new podcast and type in thinkingclearly.com. And maybe you're not a podcast app user, but you navigate the internet. You can also visit thinkingclearly.libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.com.
All right.
And of course, we're on Facebook, Thinking Clearly, where Bob and I are real people and you can engage with us, or we take smoke signals.
And we love to hear from you because our listeners have given us a lot of ideas about future topics.
Sure have.
It's gotten on our list and actually gotten into our episode. So we really cherish that. So give us a buzz one way or the other and take a listen to some of the previous shows that if you've missed them. I'm going to go ahead and give a quote. And this quote is going to be regarding our guest. It's actually a quote from the guest for this episode of Thinking Clearly. And it goes like this, quote, "We know that shouting at people does nothing to change minds. More likely, it just forces them to circle the cognitive dissonance wagons closer together. When people are starting to question their beliefs, they're going to do some quiet research on their own. Usually the first link that their search engine is going to give them is Wikipedia, and we had better be waiting for them when they show up. Changing your mind can be a very painful, slow process. We are there to help." And that's a quote from our guest this evening, Susan Gerbic, and it was from an interview with Edward Clint back in 2013. We're waiting for our guest to be on the line, and I just got the thumbs up from our engineer, Eric Allen. Why don't you frame the topic a little bit for us tonight?
Well, yeah, tonight we are going to be talking about using and editing Wikipedia for internet research. And that's not all, but I mean, that's a pretty fun topic alone. We're also going to talk about what it means to be a skeptic, because we've talked about that before. What is a skeptic? What do we mean by that? And the relationship of skepticism and critical thinking. We're going to be talking about this with our guest, Susan Gerbic,
who is a science supporter and an activist skeptic. And we're going to find out what an activist skeptic is also. She's the co-founder of Monterey County Skeptics and a founder and leader of the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. She's a regular contributor to Skeptical Inquirer, which is a publication that I get on a regular basis, and a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. And I have seen Susan referred to as the Wikipediatrician. I love that. Susan, welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hi, thanks for having me here today.
Before we get started,
thanks so much for joining us here on KMUD. Identifying as a skeptic can mean different things to different people. Can you just kind of kick us off and give us an idea of why you describe yourself as a skeptic?
Well, skeptic is kind of a loaded word, and I use different words depending on the audience I'm speaking to. Sometimes I'll say I'm a science activist or a science enthusiast, but generally skeptic is the word that I use that gets the conversation going. It's more like the person, like if you're a teacher and the student comes in and says that the dog ate their homework, So I'm more like the teacher who's looking at you with your eye, you know, with the eyebrow raised and saying, uh-huh. That's more, that's the kind of skepticism I am in. I mean, I'm willing to be convinced. Maybe the dog really did eat your homework. I mean, that's very likely, but I need to see some kind of evidence for it. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at their behavior, past behaviors, and how they don't really pay attention in class, or you know, they don't have a dog, or, you know, these kinds of things, so the default position is kind of like a skepticism when it is something that is kind of hard to believe.
Sure. And you said that magic word, evidence.
How is a scientific skeptic different from just saying I'm a skeptic?
You know, in Wikipedia terms, there is a Wikipedia page for skepticism, and that's going to be something that's more of the classics, you know, the philosophers of Greek philosophy, you know, that kind of day. And they talk about skepticism of that sort. So scientific skepticism is more of the Carl Sagan model. And so there is, I believe, a Wikipedia page for scientific skepticism. I think it's still called that. We were having a debate of what to actually call the page, but one time it was scientific skepticism, and it was more of a people who follow the scientific method, people who want to be challenged and want to have evidence of a claim. So I like to use scientific skepticism when talking about myself, because the word skeptic does have a lot of negative connotations as being like a climate change skeptic or a Holocaust skeptic or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think skeptic is a great word, because it forces you to can have a conversation with somebody. I mean, it's not like atheist. Okay, well, all right. You're an atheist? All right, that's it. Or I'm Mormon, or I'm Catholic, or whatever. You have already know what that kind of means. But when somebody says you're a skeptic or a scientific skeptic, they say, well, what kind of skeptic, or what does that actually mean? And then you're able to have a little more of a conversation with them. And so that's the difference, is we're not the classic skeptic that is that's known like in philosophy, you know, that kind of thing. So
skepticism is different than denialism. You're demarcating those two, separating them, and it's different than the traditional idea from philosophy that there is no knowledge, there is no basis of anything to know for sure. That's one branch of skepticism from philosophy. And so if I'm understanding this correctly, the way you delineate scientific skepticism is that you are first and foremost looking for evidence for claims mm-hmm. and beliefs and conclusions.
One of the phrases that kind of fits well with it is we're open to more evidence. I mean, you have to provide evidence, but the evidence that you provide has to be good evidence. You know, you can't just say something like, going back to the homework analogy I used earlier, if a child says that their dog ate their homework, okay, that is possible. Dogs do eat paper, and maybe a dog got a hold of his homework. But if the child said, well, now aliens had abducted me, and then, you know, I lost time, and there was no Wi-Fi in outer space or whatever like that. So that's an extraordinary claim. That, you know, the phrase extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And there's another popular phrase that they say when you're walking down the street and you hear a clop, 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 clop behind you, think horses, not zebras. Because, you know, it could be a zebra, but let's default to probably the most likely outcome, which is probably a horse, mm-hmm. unless I guess you're in a zebra farm or something like that.
Yeah. So this factors in the idea of probabilism in the evidence, and also relevancy of the evidence and plausibility of the evidence.
Yeah. So Thinking Clearly, which is the radio show that we're on now, is a show about critical thinking and related topics. We always try and kind of come back to that critical thinking and the hows of thinking, not the what of thinking. What sort of relationship do you see between critical thinking and skepticism?
Now, that's a really good question. I guess I would think critical thinking is more of a method. It's the tools that you use to get to a conclusion. And I guess that would be kind of the state of skepticism is kind of more of a oh, I hate to say worldview, but I'm not sure how it would actually look at it. I don't want to say cynicism. I don't want to say that skepticism and cynicism are related, but it's kind of that same idea that that is how you look at things through, you know, the prism you look at the world through, is that you like I said, as a teacher, you would look at it as, what is more likely, is the child, you know, really missing his homework, or is he just making excuses because he's made excuses in the past, and you know, he hasn't been doing things correctly in the past. But I think that critical thinking is just is something that you have to exercise. You have to, you know, like you would do a crossword puzzle, you have to constantly be exercising those. You know, the way you think of things, think about how logical fallacies, when you're watching the news or whatever you're doing, or listening to your brother-in-law talk about not going to the moon or whatever it is, you're listening to see what are the logical missteps they're making. And that's just a way of practicing that critical thinking. Mm-hmm. I think you really do need to exercise it. Take it out and exercise it. Take it around the block a couple times, and you know, and get some exercise. And if you have to watch TV to do that, or like I say, or talk to your brother-in-law, I think we all need to be spending more time critically thinking about things.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've often said that it's kind of like a muscle that you have to, right, exercise and
Excellent.
Strengthen, and it's a tool that you have to familiarize yourself with. So
yes.
If I understand kind of what you're saying, is that critical thinking is an essential method in being a skeptic and practicing skepticism, but that I'm going to kind of flip this the other way, but that just because you think critically, you're not necessarily a skeptic?
Yeah, that's probably, I'm sure we can find examples of that. I like to also tell people when I'm talking to them about skepticism, I say, you know, we're all probably skeptics. If you have
well,
to some
I don't
degree,
know about that.
Well, if you're an adult and you have managed to have a bank account, hold a job, buy a car, you probably are a skeptic in some ways. I mean, because somebody will probably somewhere in your life try to sell you a car that is, you know, not what you thought it was. And you'll look at them like, really, dude, I'm not buying that car. I know what you've been doing with it. And I know, you know, or, you know, if you have some kind of checking account or something, and there's money in it, you probably have made some good decisions in your life as far as holding on to your money and not letting it fall through your fingers. And anywhere, and everybody's out there with their, you know, hands yeah. out for your money. So
right.
if you've managed to save some money somehow, then you probably have practiced some critical thinking, some skepticism. And I think that when you're talking to people, and you know, maybe you would think that they're on opposite worldviews of yourself, it's best to find the common, you know, what is it we have in common. And I think when you tell somebody, so, you know, you're probably skeptical about things, you know, maybe a date that you wanted to go on, you know, somebody approached you on the internet, or some one of your partners told you, oh no, honey, I didn't really do that. And you're like, then why do you have lipstick on your collar? And you know, there's stray hairs on your, you know, so we practice skepticism all the time. That's how we get through life. And once people start realizing, oh, skepticism isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just a method. It's just a way we evaluate claims that are made to us. And same mm-hmm. with, you know, like I say, if your partner is, you know, smells like there's perfume on that person that is not your perfume. And there, you know, you start thinking about it like, well, where have you been? You know?
So I'm getting that there's an overlap of the word that comes to mind for me is adulting.
That's good. Yeah. Right. If you manage to get to an adulthood and you, like I said, you're probably making some good choices, but we don't all make great choices. We need to evaluate those. I mean, some people get into relationships that are constantly bad relationships. They get out of one, they get into another. And if you're adulting right, you probably should stop and say to yourself, why do I keep doing this to myself? And look at it and realize it and try to make better decisions. That's critical thinking.
So the way I'm processing this is that skepticism is really more or less an attitude, a mindset or an attitude. And there are people, I have known people that are not of that attitude or mindset. They just don't seem to analyze information that comes in, deal with it one way or the other. So skepticism is the attitude, the mindset, and critical thinking is the toolbox with tools that you need to practice and learn.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good analogy. Absolutely.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. You talked about looking for evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a phantom sound coming here.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And
it might have been aliens.
It could have been. I'm skeptical of that. But you talked a little bit about evidence and that you need to search for relevant evidence and do a robust search for evidence. And that's part of our definition of critical thinking on this show. And one of the ways that people do this, I know it's a starting point for me and really a lot of people since the advent and development of the internet, is that we will, when we're trying to research something, people or issues, the starting point is Wikipedia. You've done a lot of work on that and know a lot about it, so we want to kind of get into that. Tell us how you got interested in editing Wikipedia. Give us kind of an overview, and I want to go into detail later on, but kind of an overview of how Wikipedia works.
Wow. Okay, so let's see if I could do this, relatively quickly. Wikipedia has only been around since, I think, 2001, and it was one of those crazy ideas. There's been a lot of crazy ideas, but this one somehow caught on, and it is a absolutely insane idea that we would be able to create an online free encyclopedia that anyone really can edit and add content to in multiple languages and make it so that it's accessible without pop-ups and create rules for licensing for photographs and video and audio. And it's evolving as it started out in 2001 up until maybe 2005 or so. It was really like a free-for-all. Just anybody went in and was creating whatever. And so there's a lot of old articles that still exist on Wikipedia that were created back in the day that are really crap. Can I say crap on your show?
Yes, you can.
Okay, cool. So they really were bad. And those exist, and they're just sitting there waiting to be rewritten. They're I'm not really sure the years, but later on, maybe 2008, 2010, they started inventing things called bots, B-O-T. And that goes in, and these are automated I don't even know what they would be, robots that go in and they make changes to Wikipedia articles, correcting vandalism and fixing things. And each bot has a specific purpose. Like one bot may be going in and changing anytime somebody puts in a word that's a derogatory word. Maybe the bot only fixes one derogatory word. And if it's put into the middle of an article and it just goes in, it takes it out. So most vandalism is repaired by these robots. So I am by trade a baby photographer. I have a degree, but I've never used my degree. It's in social history. It's a BA. And I was a person who attended lots of conferences. I love people. I'm very friendly. I like to hang out and hear people's opinions and their thoughts on things. And I wasn't intellectually with these other people that I was meeting. Everybody else seems to be so, skilled in the sciences or IT or all these other areas. But one of the skills that I did have is that I'm pretty good managing people. I'm pretty good at organization. I'm good at coming up with crazy ideas and pushing them forward and planning and doing it. And so I was looking for something to do, and I didn't know what I would possibly do. And Tim Farley, who has the website, whatstheharm.net, he had mentioned that Wikipedia is something that we should be taking seriously, because this is where people are getting their information, and we should probably be taking care of it. So he taught us how to edit, like basic editing. This is in 2010. And I was taking notes, and I didn't really know what I was doing. I have no tech skills whatsoever, really. And I mean, I can use a computer and all that. And then what happened is I just started doing it, and I almost got thrown off of Wikipedia. I made lots of mistakes. I'm one of these kind of people, which probably most of the audience is, that doesn't really do well with written instructions. They're more likely to have to follow instructions better if somebody is telling you, or you can see it and do it and then, you know, ask questions. But Wikipedia, when you try to learn how to edit Wikipedia, it's all written. And if you don't have an IT background, if you're not really good at that kind of tech writing, reading technical manuals and stuff like that, you're probably going to fail at Wikipedia editing, because there's a lot of rules, a lot of inside stuff, ambiguity. It's not easy to learn how to edit Wikipedia if you don't really have a guide and somebody to help you out. And so Facebook started, and I got onto Facebook in 2010, and I, 9 or 10, and I said, hey, this is really cool. I just made an edit to Wikipedia. And somebody on my Facebook feed said, oh, wow, how did you do that? And I showed them, and then they said, oh, that's cool. What are you going to edit next? And I said, oh, I'm going to do this. And they said, oh, here, let me try. Oh, that's great. I did it too. And it just became a thing, sort of. People asked me to speak at a skeptic camp, and then they asked me to speak at Skeptical, and I had to come up with a name. And I thought, this is just, everybody should just go edit Wikipedia. I didn't realize it was going to be a thing that became a team, and over time it's become a team. I guess that's the long story.
No, it's a great story. I wanted to go back to something you said a little bit earlier when we were talking about scientific skepticism. Mm-hmm. And you kind of hinted at that it may have changed on Wikipedia and that there's a debate around that. I just want to explore that for a second, because I'm not sure that people realize that they're behind many of these seemingly simple Wikipedia pages are facilitated debates about some of the more, you know, touchy stuff or complicated things, or where there isn't clear consensus.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that, Julia, because what's going on is people are all, you know what a Wikipedia page is. They have an idea of what that looks like. And what I encourage people to do is to look at the edges of your Wikipedia page that you're looking at, whatever it is. And you'll see at the very top left, there is a tab called article, which is the article you're reading. And there's also a little blue font that says talk. And if you click on the word talk, you're going to be brought over to a talk page. And every Wikipedia page has this. You've probably never noticed this before, but it's there. And this is where Wikipedia editors let their hair down, let their back hair down. And it gets to be a discussion. And we try to keep the discussion to be very proactive, you know, constructive, and not to make assumptions about people. There's very strict rules in Wikipedia. Assume good faith. You're not supposed to research people, like what their agenda might be. You're supposed to, you know, there's a lot of rules.
And they can be really invested in the topic, obviously.
Absolutely. And so you have to be very careful when you accuse somebody of something. So, I mean, if the rules of Wikipedia applied in real life, we would have a much, much nicer world, trust me. But on a Wikipedia page, some have long, long, long conversations, and some don't have hardly any conversation at all. But you can read through these, and yes, it is written from one editor to another editor. And so some of the language may be absolutely over somebody's head because of, you know, they're using code words and they're using shortcuts and inside, just, you know, conversations.
They're experts, and, you know, they have their own little, they have their own dialogue, and they're familiar with certain terminology.
Yeah. It's a language, and that's why it's also it's difficult for people to learn how to edit Wikipedia, because these Wikipedians speak this language, and I try not to speak it. I try not to learn it, because I want to be able to train people. Mm-hmm. So I always keep myself at the level of just above somebody who's trained. Mm-hmm. I have experts all around me, but they're all the experts that are around me are people that I pretty much trained, and then they went on to become experts. And I still stay as, you know, just above somebody who's trained. So I have a little, I struggle through these talk conversations as well, because I don't want to go back and fall into that conversation with people, and then it makes it difficult to train. But yeah, scientific skepticism, I see it now is now changed to skeptical movement.
There you go.
And there was a discussion about it, and, you know, went back and forth, and it may change again. So who knows?
Well, and on the topic, I'm just going to follow up with one more thing, is that for folks who, you know, are interested, because it is really helpful to be able to watch someone or get some instructions with Wikipedia. I noticed that locally, the Humboldt State Special Collections librarian, Carly Moreno, is going to be at the Clark Historical Museum. There's going to be a Wikipedia edit-a-thon at the museum, and the event will teach participants how to edit Wikipedia in order to improve articles on the topics of local history interest. So what I've normally seen with these Wikipedia edit-a-thons is that they are interest-related. In this case, it's about local history. And then you said, you know, you as an organizer, you were looking for sort of a name for your activism, your interest. So maybe you could explain to us the scope of your Wikipedia editing project, which I believe you call Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia.
Right. So Mark Edward is my partner, and he is a expert on psychics, and he's also one of these kind of get in your face kind of people. Let's go do activism stuff and stop, you know, writing and talking about it. Let's just go do it. So Mark Edward and I have been doing a lot of things concerning psychics and mediums over the years, and he was very frustrated that organizations spend a lot of time talking about things, like I said, and not getting anything done. So we started calling everything we did guerrilla skepticism. We would say, you know, get in the streets and protest and, you know, do a homeopathy challenge, guerrilla skepticism, you know. So when I had to come up with a name, I just said, okay, guerrilla skepticism on Wikipedia. Because I didn't really, like I said, I had no idea that here it is 2019, I'd be talking about it on a radio show. I had no idea that this would, anybody would ever think that this would be important. I thought they would just, it would just be something I did over a couple days and did a lecture or two, and then that would be the end of it. So that's how we got the name. And it is pretty aggressive when you think about it. Guerrilla skepticism, it's kind of one of those things people say, oh no, what is this? These people, you know, they're mean or something. But we have a lot of fun with the word guerrilla. We spell the name like guerrilla, like a guerrilla warfare. And we also spell it like gorilla, like part of the ape community or whatever. So we have a lot of fun with it. we're actually really nice. But our scope is science, scientific skepticism, and claims of the paranormal. And anything that falls within that purview. And there's a lot that falls within that purview. And we also do this in all languages.
Let's continue to sort of look at some of the details of Wikipedia. Every once in a while, I'll look at a Wikipedia page, and there'll be a little disclaimer up at the top saying, needs documentation. Talk a little bit about the importance of documentation and how that works.
Right. And this is one of those questions that people just cannot wrap their mind around. Sometimes people I'm training cannot understand this. So a Wikipedia page is made up of secondary sources. And the secondary sources that are being used are from notable experts in that field who are publishing in a place that is also more or less notable. Now, the word notable is one of these, you know, loaded words that people think, oh, well, that just means famous and, you know, whatever. And it does not mean that. Notable is an actual term on Wikipedia that means that they are relevant and have been recognized as being relevant for some topic. And they have been recognized by their peers or their detractors or the media. But those peers, those detractors in that media need also to be notable. So it's kind of a cycle. So you can't just you can't be notable unless you've done something outstanding in a and have received media attention. So, and then, like I say, the media attention you've received has to be notable. So people writing in blogs, people writing on websites, people who are publishing self-published books, those cannot be sources on Wikipedia. Wikipedia needs citations that have journalistic integrity. I guess that's the best way of explaining it.
And who makes the call as to whether they're notable or not? And there might be a controversy between people as to what notable really means. So let's say that I was editing Wikipedia and I cited somebody who I thought was notable, and someone in the talk group behind the scenes said, no, they don't meet the criteria for being notable. How would that be resolved?
Well, you would have a discussion, and that's really what the talk page would be. Oh, they would beautiful. Say you would write it in the Wikipedia page, because we want you to be bold. We want you to make the thing. You would write it on the page, and somebody would revert it, and they would say, and they would hopefully they can either revert it and just take it out and say nothing, which is kind of rude, or they can go to the talk page and they can say, hey there, Bob. Whatever your username is, obviously you might not be Bob, but they would say, hey, Bob, you know, we don't consider the Daily Mail to be notable, or Breitbart, mm-hmm. or maybe in the case of maybe Jezebel or Medium or some of these others, or Huffington Post. That's not considered notable because they do not have journalistic integrity. BuzzFeed is another one. And yes, BuzzFeed has done some good journalism, but it's also done some very bad journalism. What was Rolling Stone came out with a really, had a problem too, not too long ago, with a woman who had written a really, you know, with the article she'd written. So those are all suspect. So the community of Wikipedia editors somebody would say, no, Bob, you didn't, that's not, we don't use Breitbart. We don't use the Drudge Report. And then you would respond and say, yes, I understand that. But in this case, I think the argument would be why I should use it is because of this. Mm-hmm. And then maybe another editor would come in behind that and say, you know what, we don't want to use the Drudge Report, but it looks like the Washington Post is now talking about that exact same subject. So let's use the Washington Post and not the Drudge Report. And so it's a conversation amongst the editors, and that's how it's decided.
That's wonderful. I mean, we're so used to a hierarchical structure where some person at the top makes the call in these cases that it's hard to wrap your mind around the idea that this is a committee, mm-hmm. an editing committee,
a committee of volunteers
discussing it and convincing with evidence.
it's one of these things that shouldn't work. It's insane.
Yeah.
And for some reason it works most of the time. I mean, there are examples that it doesn't work, but for the most part, it's like driving down the freeway. I remember teaching my oldest son to drive, and he had to merge into traffic. You know, he was trying to merge onto a freeway, and he's like, well, how do I know when to go? And I said, it's just experience. You just move up a little bit faster, or you back off a little bit, judging on the character of the, you know, how the other traffic is. You just kind of just merge in, and there's no way of teaching you exactly how. It just happens. Somebody on the freeway backs up a little bit or speeds up a little bit and makes room for you. And that's kind of how Wikipedia works. It just happens, and it seems to work. People really care about information and getting good resources on there somehow or other.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize what you said is that they are volunteers. Mm-hmm. The Wikipedia Foundation does employ some people, but it's to support the foundation as a whole, not to be on there and be editors. That's, I mean, I think something that's really incredible about Wikipedia just in general as an experiment.
Yeah. We're all volunteers. I'm not paid. None of my editors are paid. And we don't work for Wikipedia. We're just an editor just like everybody else. And there are some admins who do have, you know, higher status. They have some tools that they can do things like ban people, and they can do some things that the regular editor can't. But, you know, you do build kind of a reputation for yourself on Wikipedia, and they can look at your edit history and see if you are somebody who's here to repair Wikipedia and make mm-hmm. good good and on many topics. They don't want to see you're only focused on golfing or something. They want to see that you're working on golfing and you're working on soccer players and you know, breadcrumbs, sure, and everything else. They want to see that you work on lots of things. And so you have you're trying to develop a reputation so that when you go onto a talk page and you say, I don't think so, or here's my argument, then somebody's going to take you more seriously than if you made an account yesterday, mm-hmm, and this is your first time editing.
Sure. It's a little harder to have, you know, like organized saboteurs or, you know, like what we see on Facebook of people just shouting past each other. It's, mm-hmm, yeah, it makes sense. In a presentation you did for Free Thought Arizona called March for Science, Now What? You said when talking about climate change and other issues associated with scientific research and expertise, it's important to look at scientific consensus on the issues. And scientific consensus is definitely something that's come up numerous times on our show. But taking a, you know, good look at what the scientific consensus is, you know, is not always, sometimes it's harder than in other times. Can you kind of help us accurately gauge what is scientific consensus that we can, you know, rely on, what it looks like so we know it when we see it?
Okay, so that's another one of these things that people don't quite understand. Again, going back to the word notable. So if a person has a Wikipedia page, then we call them notable. And so if they have a Wikipedia page, it's usually because of a certain reason. So let's take somebody like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's an astrophysicist. He is an expert on astronomy. So we wouldn't want to use Neil deGrasse Tyson to his opinion on, a basket weaving. Because he's not a notable expert on weaving baskets or the history of indigenous people of California. I mean, we wouldn't use his expertise on that. He's notable. He's somebody that has a reputation of having, you know, doing good science and all that, but he's not notable for this other area. So when you are going to put a citation onto a Wikipedia page, you can use the opinion of somebody. You can say, according to Neil deGrasse Tyson, he says this about, you know, the age of the universe or whatever, cite, and you put the citation in there. That's fine because you're using somebody who's considered notable in an area. But you wouldn't say, according to Neil deGrasse Tyson, indigenous people of California were settled in the coast of... No, because that doesn't make any sense. He's notable. He might be publishing in a place that has journalistic integrity, but you can't do that. So when we come to the consensus of science, you have to, that's how Wikipedia kind of evaluates things. What is generally the consensus of science? And we try to quote the person, sum it up. We would say, so like if we're talking about climate change, we could say, according to this person who is a climatologist, they say this. But we wouldn't say, according to this person who is an architect or this person who is a veterinarian, because their expertise doesn't have any weight on climate science, even if they are notable for being a veterinarian or whatever.
Yeah, we want to make sure that the experts, we're tapping the experts in their area of expertise. And the question actually, and we're not going to have time to go more deeply into this, but the question really is not just finding an expert, but finding scientific consensus. In other words, of people who are experts in a field, what do they agree on? And that's a whole other show that we're probably going to do later on. We're especially interested in what the word skeptic means to you. That might be something that you call in and talk about because it's going to mean different things to different people.
And I'm also curious about people's relationship with Wikipedia. It seems like if you've been on the internet, you have been touched by Wikipedia or have touched it, either way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll just kind of hang out. And what I'm interested in as a skeptic, Are there issues that you can recall where your beliefs have changed? For example, some issue or practice that you thought was rubbish at first, you go, oh, that can't be right. Your skepticism hackles go up, but then new evidence actually moved you away from being skeptical about it and you endorsed it.
That's a juicy question, Bob.
It's a hard one too.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is that we're all on some sort of a path. You know, we're all, some of us are farther along than others. Some are stalled on that path to getting to a place where we know as much as we can know about ourselves, our life, the world around us. Some people are just willfully ignorant of things. I don't really think of people as being stupid at any time, but I do think that there are people who refuse to look, refuse to think about things, and are just happy to live in their little bubble. So I've had many beliefs over my life, but I'm 56. I was raised without an internet. We had Encyclopedia Britannicas, and we had many of them, but there was no way of getting knowledge before the internet other than what, you know, the library, Encyclopedia Britannica, and the nightly news. So maybe a book somewhere. So learning about the paranormal, I was totally gullible. I believed in spontaneous human combustion. I believed in astrology. I was religious. And one by one, you just kind of go through and you turn your critical thinking eye to it and you say, oh, that's not real. I think the last thing that I lost was hypnotism. You know, those people, the stage magicians, the stage hypnotists that have the people up on stage, because you'd sit there and you'd watch them and it looked so real that the person really was talking on their phone, but it was their shoe, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the last thing I finally realized, you know, that really isn't real. And it was sad because you feel like a little bit of the magic kind of goes out of the world, but slowly it all starts to go away. But, you know, there's probably things I still believe that I probably believe because I want to.
We're going to flip that around, but we do have a caller, and then we'll, when we get a little chance, we're going to flip it around the other way. In other words, something you were skeptical about at first, and not that you believed at first, but that you were skeptical about, and then you changed your mind with evidence. That's the mm-hmm. that's the question. But let's go ahead and take our first caller.
Hello, caller.
Welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hi, this is Eric. How are you all doing?
Good. Hi, Eric.
Hi. So I have a question about Wikipedia, and Julia is actually familiar with this. Some months ago, I actually did one. I think I've tried to edit it like two or three times, Wikipedia at different times. But this pertained to, there's an article on or a post on, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but depictions of LGBT in Hollywood throughout the years. And it discussed the first really open and positive movies coming out in the 1970s. And I sort of wanted to add something in there. I said, no, actually, there was a movie that came out in the early 60s called The Haunting, and it's a, you know, it's a horror film. But one of the characters is actually a woman who is identified as lesbian in the film. They don't use that word, but it's all very clear. And so in order to discuss it and why she is a positive role, I described the scene in the movie. So I did that, and then I went back a few days later, and it was scraped, and I got into a conversation with the person who scraped it and said, well, you need to cite a source for that. And I was asked, a source for what? Well, for how you described the scene. And I mm-hmm. and so I said, well, can I cite the movie itself? That's what you would watch to confirm it. And they said, no, you really need to find a review or something that describes the same scene. Well, this movie came out in the early 60s, long before the internet, so most of the reviews aren't online. I did find a couple of blog posts that described the scene and actually agreed with my analysis, but you don't want to just have somebody with blog posts. So and it's in the movie, and yet there's nothing online to verify the accuracy of my description of the scene. And I found that a little frustrating. And so
yeah.
It's completely mm-hmm. left out, with the post now saying, retaining still, the first positive depictions of LGBT are, you know, about a decade later.
This is a really good question. Thank you so much for giving this, because this happens to us often. I hear this all the time when I do Q&A. People try to make a change. They know that they're what they're doing is correct. They know that they have the evidence. They know this, and they are trying to make the change, but yet they make it incorrectly, and somebody takes it out. And in your case, it sounds like somebody tried to explain to you what was going on and sounded like they were polite. They're not always so polite when they remove this, and it leaves you even more frustrated. So what's going on here is you have to look at it from this view. We cannot allow original research. So just because you saw it in a movie and you were describing the scene, you yourself, Eric, are not an expert at this. So you are. So when you say, here, let me describe the scene and let me put this in here, you're acting as an expert, and you're also trying to put original research, and it's also primary, kind of like a primary, you're saying, this is what I saw. We can't allow that, because if we allow that, we could allow somebody to say, I went to a psychic and the psychic was telling me this, and I was there, and this is what they said. And he, you know, so we have to use a secondary source.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I do think
I've got that, except we have the movie itself available to the public.
That's primary.
I mean, anybody
that's a primary
could watch
source.
It and verify it.
Right. But that's a primary source. You're using a primary source, which is the movie. You have to use a secondary source. So, there has to be, and I'm sure there's people who are experts in this kind of field, who some expert somewhere has written something about this and not on a blog, or it's possible, if you care that much about this, is to write to somebody who is an expert, who is notable, and say, look, I really want to change this Wikipedia entry, and here it is. It's right there. Can you please watch this scene and write something? And then we could turn around and use that citation.
That was one of my thoughts is, yeah.
That's how you do it. That's how it has to be done. We have to have the citation, because it's not enough for anybody to say, I know this with my own heart. I know this. Or like James Randi tried to change his own Wikipedia page, and people were like, you can't do that. And he goes, I know when I was born. I know these things. And it's like, I understand that, but we don't know that this is you, James Randi, who's really editing this. We don't know. It could be somebody else with the name James Randi. We can't allow somebody to do, you have to. So the movie's there, but that is a primary source.
So if Eric would have actually been a movie critic,
yes,
then he would be okay.
A notable.
Eric, how does it sound to be told you're not very notable in this?
I just don't know what kind of expertise I would need to describe a scene in a movie, but I get the point.
Yeah.
The bottom line is right now that wiki entry is objectively inaccurate. Because they certainly didn't change, the other portions that I was kind of responding to. The person was very polite, by the way. No complaints about that whatsoever.
So we need a secondary source. There probably is one somewhere. And to become notable, and again, I hate that word notable, you find some movie critic or something somewhere on there. If somebody who's written in the paper that's a notable local.
Or write to the Advocate magazine or
somebody. I want to change this Wikipedia page, but there's no citation to prove it. Can you help me? And then if you can't do it, just send me an email, susangerbick@yahoo.com, and I will be happy to make the change for you. But that's exactly what's going on.
And it's not a perfect system, and there's going to be anomalies like this crop up, but it sounds like it's a rule that has a reason.
It has a reason, yeah.
And it sounds like we have a couple more callers on the line.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot, Eric.
Thanks so much for that, Eric. And
that was a good question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love his passion about movies. Yeah. Movies!
Yeah, and getting it right. Facts, you got to have it right. I like that. Who else we got?
Let's take our next call. Caller, welcome
Hello,
to
caller.
Thinking Clearly.
Hi, this is Marianne.
Hi, Marianne. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I just really kind of have a funny story about Wikipedia. Having been a high school biology teacher for 30 years or so, when I taught a marine biology class, I wanted the students to research the famous Pacific Northwest tree octopus, which, if you're a skeptic, you've probably heard of that, right? Way back in the 90s by Zapato or someone. It's a very realistic website. Well, it looks real when you go to it, and there's lots of good facts about this. But I told them, you know, not to use Wikipedia, because I wanted them to look at a real science site like the Zapato site. And, of course, I'm doing this all tongue-in-cheek. And, oh, my gosh, they're writing down diligently all the facts about the tree octopus and how it's endangered and blah, 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 not reading the whole article, but picking out the things they think I want to hear. And then one student, you know, kind of raises his hand and goes, well, wait, I just looked it up on Wikipedia, and it says that site is fake. So I thought it was kind of funny because it worked the opposite way I wanted it to.
That's great. That is great.
And those of you know those of you who haven't looked it up, the tree octopus is really quite a sight to be seen.
I'm going
to look
it up.
But if you read all the small print, which of course they did not do, and this was another one part of the lesson, it sounds realistic, and there's something thrown in about the biggest predator is Bigfoot. But nobody saw that because they don't read all the way through. So it was kind of interesting.
I mean, what other predator would a tree octopus have?
Somebody's got to reach those limbs.
You know, it's just,
oh, the jackalope.
That's probably one of my favorite things to do, is just trying to teach critical thinking when it's possible. One other thing would be like astrology. You know, I would ask everybody what their sun sign was and then totally mix them up and read them the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And at the end, reveal to them that it wasn't even the sun sign they told me. And they were, you know, they'd get kind of angry, but they realized, oh, I guess those could all apply to everyone.
So, we need more teachers like you.
Right?
Yeah. Susan's going to sign you up for her Gorilla Wikipedia
project.
Yeah,
yeah. Get the critical thinking in there. And let me say really quick, people are constantly telling me that, you know, their professor told them not to go to Wikipedia. And I'm telling everybody right now who's listening, they're going to Wikipedia. They're going to go. And you know, let's just make sure this is in really good shape. There are kids plagiarizing Wikipedia at this moment. And let's give them the best information we possibly can. And Wikipedia is a wonderful place to start.
Mm-hmm,
the citations at the bottom of the page should be enough to, it's like a one-stop shop. They should be able to find all the information there and then go from that to the sources that they need to be able to do the paper that they need to do and the research they need.
It's so true, because I have to say, I was a kid who absolutely loved sitting down in front of encyclopedias, and I would look something up, or I would flip through the pages, or just see what it has to say about coyotes. And the thing is, you know, if you open up an encyclopedia and you look at black hole, you might get a couple paragraphs, maybe three, right? If you go into Wikipedia, man, you've got like real astrophysicists like actually explaining
with integrals and differentials and all kinds of equations.
To the best of their ability, because it's
okay. We're getting a little short on time.
Thank you very much, caller.
Thank you.
I think we have another caller.
This will be our last call. Hello, caller.
Yeah. So, someone said, if a person claims to be a skeptic and they say, I believe all scientific consensus, therefore I'm a skeptic, doesn't that make them a believer in a way? And what's the difference between a skeptic and a believer?
That's a really good question.
Because it assumes science is the consensus is always correct.
Well, I like that.
No,
it isn't always. It was, you said it in a really specific way that I think makes it a good question, which is, if you say you're a skeptic, but you say you believe in all scientific consensus, doesn't that make you a believer?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Susan?
Well, I cannot stand philosophy.
I take that personally.
Sorry. I know I have some really good friends that love philosophy, and I'm like, it's like poetry or Shakespeare. I'm like, whatever, I'm over that already. I'm sorry.
You're just cutting down left and right. Take that, Shakespeare.
I know, but the way I look at it is Wikipedia is not on paper, so it can constantly change. And so, you know, we're never done. So if we think we have what the scientific consensus is today, that could possibly change with more evidence and more citations and a discussion. And absolutely not. We're always changing our mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of being a skeptic or a scientific thinker, is that, you know, that's fine. I'm happy to believe in psychics any moment that we see some evidence for it and show me a way of being plausible. But
So part of it's the absolutism of, you know, a scientific consensus isn't a thing that happens and then is etched in stone stays there. So part of it is that it's changing. But I'm also, I'm kind of stuck on this believe, like, you necessarily believe all scientific consensus.
No.
I mean, I've never heard anyone say that. So I think it's a clarification that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a straw man argument for that because basically that's the strength of science is that whatever scientific consensus is today may not be that way tomorrow. So we'll get back to the subject. Please call in and engage us.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Susan. It's been a really fun and exciting show, and I never realize how excited I get when I think about Wikipedia.
Yeah,
that went really fast, too. Yeah. People, and please, you know, reach out to me if you have questions about Wikipedia. I'm happy to look at
and give us your contact information.
Susan Gerbic at yahoo.com, or you could go to my website, which is susangerbic.org. Or you can go to our website, which is abouttimeproject.org.
And you visit with us on Facebook as well. Thank you.
Yeah, you can find me in many places. Please just reach out to me. I'm very friendly, and I'll be happy to look at whatever it is you
And said. I'll also just put a little plug out there that Humboldt County and Redwood Community Radio and Southern Humboldt and Garberville and all these amazing things, the Eel River Valley, can use updating on Wikipedia. It's really quite barren out
there. I need some locals is what I need. I've spoken to the Humboldt skeptics. I was just there in last summer. And man, you guys, come on, step up.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Susan. We enjoyed it. Thank you, Eric. Good job as always.
Favorite engineer for today.
He loves it when you say that. And thank you very much, Julie. You add so much insight and interesting aspects to this show. I just can't thank you enough.
Oh, I have so much fun doing it with you, Bob.
All right.
And you can find us on the podcast tomorrow, probably.
Yes, we'll get it up tomorrow. And remember, think clearly.
Think for yourself, people. It's your first and your last chance.
This program was produced in KMUD's Redway Studios and is provided courtesy of KMUD, People Powered Radio.